You're listening to Stateside from Michigan Radio. I'm Cynthia Canty. At last year's State of the Union speech, Flint Congressman Dan Kildee's guest seat was empty. It was a seat for Marine veteran Amir Hekmati of Flint, who has been held in an Iranian prison since August 29, 2011. At tonight's speech, Congressman Kildee will once again use his guest seat to focus attention on Amir Hekmati and the other Americans imprisoned by Iran. This time he will have Hekmati's sister in that seat. Congressman Dan Kildee is with us now. I've reviewed our past conversations, Congressman. We have talked again and again about Amir Hekmati and his plight. 4.5 years inside that prison, still no sign Iran is willing to consider releasing Amir?
Well, there have been some signs. There's been new negotiation, direct negotiations between the U.S. and Iran. But, of course, until he's released, it's hard to think about any of this as progress. Just a few months ago, I actually myself directly spoke to the Foreign Minister Zarif about this. And there's a willingness to engage that we haven't seen until recently. And obviously, the nuclear agreement opened the door for some of that negotiation. But, you know, until he's home, it's hard to think about any of this as progress.
I'm curious, when you have that conversation, what is the response? I mean, how is that defended? How does he respond to the presentation of the plight of this man who went to visit grandma in Iran and winds up inside of a prison?
I mean, often the response is, it's hard to determine whether it's a genuine response, but it's that, you know, there's a separation of power, and the judiciary is separate from the executive branch within Iran, and it's in the hands of the judiciary. So it's not often like a full-throated defense. I've never spoken to an Iranian representative that tried to justify his imprisonment, but they tend to view these situations very much as transactional. And, you know, they raise the fact that there are Iranian citizens being held by the U.S. And so one of the things we've learned from past experiences in this regard is that you have to continue to press over and over again. And if we allow these cases to sort of fade into the woodwork, that's the greatest danger that these Americans face.
So you're using tonight's State of the Union speech as one more way to press. And you're actually able to get Sarah's husband there tonight as well, right?
That's right. Her husband, Dr. Rami Kurdi, will also be with her and will be able to sit with her at the State of the Union. They've really been a team trying to lead the effort to free Amir. So another member of Congress, Congressman Matt Salmon from Arizona, was willing to allow Rami to take his guest seat, which is a nice gesture. He's a Republican, a person with whom I often find little agreement, but in this case, it's one of those issues that sort of unites Democrats and Republicans, so I appreciate the fact that he did that.
Is having Amir's sister there tonight as your guest, do you feel that's aimed as much at the president and the State Department as it is at the government of Iran?
I think it's really both. I mean, principally, our argument is with Iran to demonstrate to them that the American people and I, as a member of Congress, have not forgotten, that they can't take that off their list of things to do. They've got to release these Americans. But, you know, as much as I think the president has done an awful lot to try to secure the release of these Americans, my job is to keep pressure on our own administration as well. And so certainly the presence of Sarah and Rami sends a message to the world, to the rest of Congress, but also underscores for the president that I'm not going to let go of this, and he needs to continue to do everything he can.
Do you worry, Congressman, that with a new president coming into office a year from now, whomever he or she might be, that all the efforts and that of the others working on Amir Hekmati's behalf and the other imprisoned Americans, do you fear it's going to go back to a reset? You're going to go back to square one?
I hope not. And that's, of course, why we think it's important that Congress assert itself, because Congress has a little more permanence, significantly more permanence than administrations do. So while the administration has taken the lead on direct negotiation, you know, I, as a member of Congress, have pursued my own channels of discussion with Iran. And so we would hope that it would be clear with Iran and even with our own government that there are certain things that are principles that transcend administrations, and certainly the freedom of these Americans should be one of those principles.
Meantime, as this continues and you continue pressing, how much communication have you or Amir's family been able to have with him, whether it's spoken or written?
Well, until recently, there was very little communication, but a sign of some progress has been that Amir is allowed very short telephone calls with his family almost on a daily basis. They're monitored calls. They're usually only just a few minutes. And so my communication or my messages back and forth to Amir have been through his family. I have not spoken to him directly because that doesn't, it's not allowed. But it's given us a chance to at least check in on him on a regular basis to make sure that, you know, he's doing as well as one would expect him to do, given the terrible circumstances that he's in.
We're talking with Flint Congressman Dan Kildee, and we need to switch over now, Congressman, to the Flint water situation. We've seen this burst of activity in the last week from the governor. We've got the state of emergency declaration, the renewed efforts to get water filters and bottled water to people on the ground in Flint. We've had two news conferences with Flint's Mayor Karen Weaver, and yet the governor has yet to ask for any assistance from federal agencies. As Flint's congressman, have you had the chance to ask him why not?
I have, and I have not received any kind of of an acceptable answer. Frankly, you know, there are things that I agree with the governor on, things that I disagree with him on. I have been incredibly disappointed with his management of this crisis. His administration knew that there was water with lead in it going into the bodies of children back in July. So for him to come into Flint yesterday and hold a news conference after having declared a state of emergency, finally, after all these months, and not really announce anything other than that he is appointing yet another interdepartmental committee to try to contemplate and think about and then come up with some kind of a plan. You know, it's beyond my comprehension that he continues to treat this as a public relations problem rather than as a public health emergency. Meanwhile, kids in Flint are still being exposed to high levels of lead in the water. I don't know why he doesn't just call the National Guard and have them send their water trucks to Flint. They work for him. He could do that. That would at least be a small but tangible step that shows that he's interested in helping. I am just enormously frustrated by how passive he seems to be when it comes to the health of children in Flint. It's just beyond my comprehension.
He also said Monday he did not learn about the extent of the trouble and the poisoning of Flint's children until October 1st. What does that say to you?
Well, first of all, I mean, I don't want to question the veracity of his comment, but I have a hard time accepting that. When you think about how significant the kind of circumstance this is, and when his own chief of staff, who is quite competent, is seen with through emails communicating back and forth to the Department of Environmental Quality that he thinks that this is a serious crisis and that citizens in Flint are being blown off, I have a hard time accepting the idea that the governor didn't know about this until October, especially when I wrote a letter to him before that asking him to step up and to help. I unfortunately think what's happening here is that the governor may be trying to create a set of facts or a narrative that excuses him for not having taken more decisive action until just now, which, again, is treating this like a public relations problem, not like the public health crisis that it is.
And speaking of letters, tell us what's in the letters you've just sent to Governor Snyder and also to the White House.
Well, the letter to Governor Snyder is I reiterated my previous request to him that he ask for federal help. I wrote to him some months ago asking him to seek federal assistance for this. I wrote to the president asking him to direct federal agencies to respond. Even though under the way the emergency response process works, generally federal intervention is triggered by a request from the governor, why the governor continues to not only provide state resources but is unwilling to ask for federal resources, to me, is, again, it's just beyond my comprehension. Other than the only thing I can conclude is that he's trying to keep this from appearing to be a serious crisis when clearly it is. You know, holding news conferences, making apologies, announcing the state of emergency, all those things are meaningless unless it translates into people in Flint getting help. And so far, nothing he's done has translated to people in Flint getting help. And it's beyond my comprehension why he does not take this more seriously. I mean, he knows better. He's supposed to be this sort of top-notch CEO. Act. do something. Don't just sit around talking to one another and holding cabinet meetings and trying to formulate long-term plans when right now kids in Flint are being poisoned.
Flint's in the spotlight right now, but we've all become exquisitely aware that this problem of aging water infrastructure is something that is going to affect our entire state, that the Snyder administration and future administrations are going to have to deal with. Do you expect Michigan will need to turn to the federal government to help in what's going to be a staggering overhaul and update?
I think when it comes to the issue of public infrastructure, clearly there's a very important federal role and a state role. I've been pushing for a federal infrastructure bank since I've been here in Congress. I think, though, it is really important to distinguish the clear problems that we have with aging infrastructure and the fact that we have lead service lines in Flint is one of the issues. Mm-hmm. But that is a distinct issue from the just really poor management that was exercised in changing to the Flint River as the primary water source, not adhering to the warnings that came from citizens, from the EPA, from pediatricians in Flint. So there are two related but I think quite distinct questions that that relate to this crisis. And I do think the issue of long-term infrastructure has to be on the agenda. But in the meantime, we know that infrastructure is compromised, and the fact that the governor continues to not take decisive action in dealing with this crisis is really, really bothersome.
Looking at this entire saga, Congressman, what lessons can future governors and their teams, do you think, take from this Flint water debacle?
One is to not be dismissive of critics. I mean, their reaction when they heard from the EPA was to try to discredit the individual in the EPA. When they heard about Mark Edwards, the researcher from Virginia Tech, claim that there is significant increase in lead, they tried to discredit him. When Dr. Monahana Atisha, one of the real heroes of this, the local pediatrician that released data on elevated blood levels, they questioned her research methodology. The biggest lesson is a lesson that most people learn earlier in their political careers, is that while you might not enjoy criticism, you have to listen to it, because very often the information that is being supplied is really critical to the job that you're doing. And I think the lesson that the governor failed to heed is that sometimes his critics might be his best friends, because they could point out a problem that could be avoided. In this case, they didn't get that lesson. And it's unfortunate that the people of the city of Flint are the ones that are paying the price for that.
Democratic Congressman Dan Kildee of Flint will have Amir Hekmati's sister, Sarah, as his guest tonight at the State of the Union speech. One more way of putting the spotlight on his constituent, who's been in Iranian prison for the past 4.5 years. Congressman Kildee, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.